Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about Part 3, Chapter 22, as read to you by Swim, said the Mama Fishy. Simply productive said, "Thank you, Swim," said the Mama Fishy, "for the reading. It was nice to hear a calm, thoughtful voice, and it gave me time to consider what the characters were thinking. What a treat. I am wondering if Vronsky will convince Anna to up and go by using their attraction to each other. So far, that has seemed to work effectively. I also have been thinking a lot about how we all collectively respond to the book, and it occurs to me that due to my age, I connect with the book by making personal connections. For me, I connect my past relationships, all failed, ugh. My money, not as bad as you would think, Ander. I have no student loans left to pay, and I have a job with a pension, but still not exactly saving a lot of money each month. And my past experiences with cheating, I refused to cheat, so just never became exclusive because I didn't want to be tied down when I was 19. But it does make sense that I connect the general idea of a hedonistic lifestyle with the movement away from structured religiosity due to my background. So please recognize, friends, that this mini essay is requested is incredibly biased. Here we go. There's a simply productive mini essay. Now, I'm not going to read this mini essay on the podcast because it's probably longer than the chapter. It's quite long, but I do appreciate the mini essay. And I would encourage everyone to go to the subreddit and have a read of it. I did ask for it, so I got it. And now I'm going to not read it because I think it would take me a good, I'm going to say, at least 10 minutes to read that essay. Swim said, the Mama Fishy said, "This is what I love about these discussions. Inevitably, I learn more about the subject. This time, monogamy. I went searching because I was unfamiliar with your viewpoint. Wikipedia has a very thorough article on this subject, and at least one theory supports your thesis about religion's role." So the mini essay was talking a lot about how Christianity is in large part the reason why monogamy is so widely adopted by cultures around the world. Cool. All right, let's move on from that, because I'm not going to read the mini essay, so the replies to the mini essay are a bit out of context, but I really love the conversation, and I thank you guys for having that conversation here. Nimrod said, "Long time listener, first time commenter, welcome to the podcast. I'd fallen 2 weeks behind. Among my excuses are that I have a 1 year old." Oh, you have a 1 year old. Oh, okay. Well, that's a good excuse. However, I just think the 11 chapters were dragging me down. Excellent reading. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Would love to hear more again. The pace was perfect." Yeah. Agreed. Swim said, the Mama Fishy. Please, if you feel like volunteering again to do some more reading, or you feel like doing some more reading, let's tee it up. Just let me know which chapter you intend to read, and let me know when it's there. Same goes to all my readers who have done so far. Simply productive, and I know my mind's gone blank. Nifurific, the dulcet tones. And anyone listening who feels like doing some reading, you're all very welcome to participate in that. Mango Mondo said, "Oof, Vronsky is clearly starting to eye the exit. For all his talk of love, he doesn't seem too keen on getting shot for Anna's sake." Gunnardl said, "I definitely got the vibe that he wanted to bail once she started talking about her son. He knows that if it comes down to her lover versus her son, Anna is going to choose her son, and wisely so." Well, you'd think so. You'd hope so, wouldn't you? I think this chapter was a lot of misunderstanding each other, right? He doesn't want to get shot, obviously. And I think that's what he's thinking, you know? But Anna thinks that he doesn't care or something like that, or she thinks that he's upset, but I think he's just thinking, I don't want to get killed. But anyway, it seems like they're not quite on the same page. If that, I don't know, doesn't it? Is that what you got from that one? I Am Norwegian says, not a lot of forward movement or clarity were gained after building up this meeting for a few chapters. We know that a duel won't happen. Alexei won't allow it. Anna won't do anything either. She thinks of herself as too weak to solve her situation, and she cannot leave her son. What's the solution? Vronsky whisking her away? It's a good question, says Swims at the moment. Fishy, what a mess. Anna and Vronsky are so limited in their 19th century options. Not a lot of 19th century options, is there? All right, let's continue. Let's breeze through today, hey? Breeze through. This is chapter 23. On Monday, the usual meeting of the committee of the 2nd of July took place. Karenin entered the council room, greeted the members and the president as usual, and took his seat, his hand lying ready on the papers before him. Among these papers were the statistics that he needed and a draft of the statement he was going to make, but he did not really require the figures. He remembered them all and did not even consider it necessary to go over in his mind what he was going to say. He knew that when the time came, and he saw his opponent before him vainly trying to look indifferent, his speech would naturally be far more fluent and better than if he prepared it beforehand. He felt that the contents of his speech would be so important that every word would be significant. Yet, as he listened to the general reports, his face wore a most innocent and artless look. Looking at his white hands with the thick veins and the delicate long fingers toying with the two edges of a white sheet of paper before him, and at his head wearily bent to one side, no one would have expected that words would flow from his lips, which would raise a terrible storm and make the members shout each other down, forcing the president to call them to order. When the reports had been heard, Karenin, in his quiet, thin voice, informed the meeting that he wished to bring to their notice some considerations of his own on the question of the settlement of the native races, and the attention of the meeting turned to him. Karenin cleared his throat, and, as was his wont when making a speech, without looking at his opponent, he fixed his eyes on the first man opposite him, a quiet little old man who never had any views in connection with the special committee, and began to explain his considerations. When he came to the fundamental and organic law, his opponent jumped up and began to raise objections. Stremov, who was also on the special committee, stung to the quick, began justifying himself, and the meeting became quite a stormy one, but Karenin triumphed, and his motion was carried. Three new special committees were formed, and the next day nothing was talked about in a certain Petersburg set but that meeting. Karenin's success was even greater than he had expected. When he woke on the Tuesday morning, he recalled with pleasure his victory of the previous day and could not help smiling, even while wishing to appear indifferent, when the secretary, with a desire to flatter him, reported the rumours that had reached him concerning what had happened at the meeting. Busy with the secretary, Karenin quite forgot that it was Tuesday, the day fixed for Anna's return, and was surprised and unpleasantly startled when the footman came in to inform him of her arrival. Anna returned to Petersburg early in the morning, and as she had wired that the carriage should be sent for her, he might have expected her. But he did not come out to meet her when she arrived. She was told that he had not yet come out of his study, where he was busy with his secretary. She sent word to her husband that she had arrived and went to her boudoir, where she set to work sorting her things, expecting that he would come in to see her, but an hour passed and he did not come. She went down into the dining room on a plea of giving orders and purposely spoke in a loud voice, thinking that he would come. But although she heard him go out of the study door to take leave of the secretary, he did not come to her. She knew that according to his habit he would soon go away to his work, and she wished to see him first. She passed through the ballroom to his study and resolutely went in. When she entered, he was sitting in his official uniform, evidently ready to start, with his elbows on a little table, looking wearily in front of him. She saw him before he saw her, and knew that he was thinking about her. When he saw her, he was about to rise, but changed his mind as his face flushed, a thing Anna had never seen do before. However, he quickly rose and came toward her, looking not at her eyes, but at her forehead and hair. He came up, took her hand, and asked her to sit down. "I am very glad you have come," he said, sitting down beside her. He evidently wished to say something, but faltered. Several times he tried to speak, but stopped. Although, while preparing for this interview, she had been teaching herself to despise and blame him, she did not know what to say, and pitied him. There was silence for some time. "Is Serza well?" he asked, and without waiting for a reply, he added, "I am not dining at home today and must be going at once." "I meant to go away to Moscow," she said. "Oh no, you were quite right to come," he replied, and again became silent. Seeing that he had not the strength to begin, she began for him. "Alexis Alexandrovitch," she said, studying his face, and without dropping her eyes under his gaze, fixed on her hair, "I am a guilty woman, and I am a bad one, but I am what I was before, as I then told you. I have come to tell you now I cannot make any change." "I am not questioning you about it," he replied suddenly in a firm tone and looking with hatred straight into her eyes. "I had expected it." Under the influence of anger, he had evidently regained perfect self-possession, "but I repeat again what I then told you and subsequently wrote," he went on in a shrill, thin voice. "I again repeat that I will not know it. I ignore it as long as it is not known to the rest of the world, as long as my name is not dishonored. Therefore, I warn you that our relations must remain what they have been, and that if you let yourself be compromised, I shall be obliged to take measures to safeguard my honor." "But our relations cannot be what they were before," Anna began in a timid voice, looking at him with frightened eyes. When she saw his quiet gestures, heard his shrill, childish, and sarcastic voice, her repulsion toward him destroyed the pity she had felt for him, and she now experienced nothing but fear and anxiety to clear up the situation at any cost. "I cannot be your wife since I..." she began. He laughed in a cruel, cold manner. "I suppose the kind of life you have chosen has affected your principles. I respect or despise both as much, so much. I respect your past and despise your present. That the interpretation you give to my words was far from my thoughts." Anna sighed and hung her head. "I cannot understand, however, that with your independent mind," he went on, getting heated, "informing your husband of your infidelity and appearing to see nothing unseemly in it, you should consider it unseemly to continue to fulfill a wife's duty to your husband." "Alexis Alexandrovitch, what do you want of me? "What I want is not to meet that person here, and for you to behave in such a way that neither society nor the servants shall be able to accuse you for you not to see that man. I think that is not much to ask. And in return, you will enjoy all the advantages of a wife without fulfilling her duties. That is all I have to say. Now, I must be going, and I shan't be back to dinner." He rose and went toward the door. Anna rose, too. He stopped and let her pass first. Alrighty, there we go. That's another chapter down. He stopped and let her pass first. Why did he do that? He didn't want to go in together, right? He stopped and let her pass first. I'm going to write that. Stopped and let her pass first. Seems significant. Plus, I had to write that down in the subreddit anyway, is the final line of the chapter. So I might as well do it now. All right, thank you all for listening to that. I'll see you tomorrow.